All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
Truer words never spoken. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, January 19th. I know how a calendar works. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Coming up this hour, I have to stop right there. Didn't we just get done playing a bite from the old movie Broadcast News about thinking you always know best, trying to be the smartest person in the room, and I muffed up the date? I don't think I've ever worked faster to undermine my own branding.
I was going to say something about it if you didn't.
And here's where the OCD kicks in. I'm looking at my show notes right now. Right now, the clicking you hear is me correcting the date, even though I've already said it, but I have to have the correct date in this document. So I'm off to a roaring start here on this Thursday, January 19th, 2023. Coming up this hour in this week's Hometown Health segment at the bottom of the hour, Dr. Kristen Lyerly brings along a couple of friends to talk about Doctors in Recital. It's an annual event that shows off the talents of Green Bay area physicians while raising funds that benefit music education programs and other local charities. And Luke Mathers will join us just after 7:45 as well. You can always reach us by email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. You can also call us 844-967-2789 or use the line up north, 715-388-7155. That line might be a little snow clogged and slippery right now as a good 3+ inches of snow appears to have fallen here on Lake Wissota. I'm sure that there's a band of more of it south of here, you know, stretching from probably that La Crosse to Green Bay area. So please use all due care out on the roads. In our last hour, we got to talking about a few different things that divide people in Wisconsin. And I'm always curious as to your thoughts of it, which you can do by phone, by email, by commenting on the Up North News Facebook page underneath where you can see the live video feed of this show. The three things that stirred up trouble were noodles in chili, because an Instagram post talked about Wisconsin chili, quote unquote, which means adding elbow macaroni. And does that in fact mean it's no longer chili? The other is Farm and Fleet versus Fleet Farm. And are you clear on whether you think that it's the result of a family separation battle or what it really is, which is two different families in the mid-50s started stores with similar names? And the fact of the matter is there were many other stores that had Farm and Fleet in their names back during that era. But are you a Farm and Fleet person or are you a Fleet Farm person, or does it not matter? And if you missed the announcement late yesterday, Culver's is ditching Pepsi and putting in Coke products instead. Does that change anything about, you know, what you do at Culver's and whether you feel that strongly about soda and whatnot? I have got to give credit, though, first to one of my favorite people on Twitter, Jay Bullock, a Milwaukee area educator whose handle is Folkbum. I saw the headline that Jacinda Ardern is stepping down as New Zealand's prime minister. She's 42. She has done a masterful job over the past 5 years, greatly advanced progressive leadership, steered the country through a pandemic, through a terrorist attack and other things. She's stepping down, saying that she just doesn't have, you know, the fuel in the tank to do another term, which, again, talk about a breath of fresh air instead of just hanging on for the sake of hanging on. So Jay tweets, waiting to see if Jacinda makes a visit to Iowa later this month. Hashtag Jacinda 2024. Yes. Yes. 1,000 times. Yes. Jacinda, I will help with your citizenship test, whatever you need. We would, we'd be more than happy to have you come over here. So Jay, thanks for the hint. We're definitely going to work on that.
Although I think if somebody doesn't have the fuel in the tank to be the prime minister of New Zealand, they absolutely do not have the fuel in the tank to take over this mess.
I think that coming over here might actually fuel up that tank when you see some of the ridiculousness that we have to deal with. I mean, sure, it can be draining at times, but at other times it just fires you up to keep going. I'll give you an example right here. Overnight, Congressman Brian Stile, from Southeast Wisconsin, puts up a post that says, I'll be fighting for strong election integrity laws as chairman of the House Committee on Administration. We need to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. In other words, Brian Stile, who again some folks saw as somewhat moderate, proves to be just as right-wing as the rest of them in spreading the big lie and casting doubts on American democracy. So when I saw that at 4 o'clock this morning, I realized he did not finish his sentence. He did not complete his announcement. And so I finished it for him. And so I think the only way this works is if he completes it, Congressman Stile, by saying, "And so I announced today that I am joining with Democrats to support nonpartisan redistricting, a ban on corporate cash, and the removal of Congressman Fitzgerald and Tiffany under the 14th Amendment." I mean, if that's what Brian Stile wants to do, if he wants to fight to restore election integrity, then those are the things that he needs to be doing. But if he's going to turn the House Administration Committee into another dog and pony show, then God bless him. But it's not going to get any attention, again, outside the right-wing media bubble, especially since the main dog and pony show is going to be the House Oversight Committee. And we've talked about that, about how some of the people that were named to that committee included Jim Jordan and Paul Gosar, Andy Biggs. It's just a hoop. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert. Well, the full roster of this circus came out yesterday, and it now includes, to no surprise, Glenn Grothman of Wisconsin. We'll be back. You're up north.
Outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
See, I don't know. You can play Dino around Christmas time. It's a perfectly appropriate song, but it's not Christmas specific, so it definitely works in this case. So please take it easy out there on the roads while we put up with that thing we call weather. It is what it is. It's not a blizzard. It's weather. It's winter in Wisconsin. Coming up in our next segment, we will have Dr. Kristen Lyerly again with her guests, Lucinda Roberts and Kim Shefchik, to talk about Doctors in Recital. Dr. Lyerly also continues to do a podcast, a separate podcast, with Kirk Bangstad of the Minocqua Brewing Company. And I used to be a part of that show as well. It was called the Up North Podcast. It still is. Kirk is bringing it back and is doing it live on the Facebook page of Minocqua Brewing Company, the brewing company that he runs and that has a super PAC dedicated to advancing progressive causes up here in the Northwoods of Wisconsin. Well, I wanted to give that shout out to Kirk because I heard one of his more recent podcasts. And in talking about the upcoming race for state Supreme Court, we can't talk enough about the importance of it. In fact, even the New York Times on Tuesday reported on it, calling it arguably the most important election in America in 2023, because the winner of this race will determine whether conservatives or liberals hold a 4-3 majority in this critical presidential battleground state, according to the New York Times article. We have a Supreme Court that has been broken for quite some time as conservative justices go further and further to the extreme right. And Kirk was talking to a guest about the rigged maps, the gerrymandered maps that we've had in Wisconsin now for more than a decade, and how those maps aren't going to change in this next decade unless control of the Supreme Court changes, which it could do this April. But he walked us through the four different Supreme Court mistakes that were made in getting us the maps, the rigged maps that we have right now. And we talked about these previously at Up North News, but they bear repeating again to see how the right-wing justices inserted themselves into this debate so that they could preserve the cheating that Republican legislators were doing with these maps. The very first step was agreeing to take the case. the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin has not taken up redistricting cases before. Going back to 1964, it deferred to federal courts as having the knowledge base and the experience to make sure that fair maps are written. But more recently, this Supreme Court said, no, we'd actually like to take a crack at it. And boy, did they ever. They then took the maps from the last decade, the 2011 maps that were simply diabolical in their extreme partisan gerrymander. This court took a look at those maps and said, okay, we're going to be in charge of the next round of maps, and we insist that the next round of maps take a least changes approach. In other words, use the current map, rigged though it may be, as a base and make minimal adjustments in the lines to account for the population shift. There is no precedent for that. There was no legal foundation to take a map that has been the subject of widespread acceptance of its gerrymander and say, yep, we're going to stick with that one. Well, at one point, they chose a map submitted by Governor Tony Evers, and then the Supreme Court of the United States stepped in. And in so many words, said that the map submitted by Governor Evers was a case of reverse discrimination. There were too many black districts in it. I don't know. You figure it out. But that's what the right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court said. Tossed it back to the state Supreme Court, to the right-wing justices there. And what they ended up doing was picking a different map submitted by Republicans, which again makes the least amount of changes to an already rigged map. So in those four steps, we went from bad to worse in terms of the lack of representation and proper representation for Wisconsin voters, who by a narrow margin are more progressive or Democratic. And yet you look at the congressional makeup and it's 6-2 Republican. And you look at the Assembly and Senate, and there's about 2/3 of both members of both bodies have Republican members. Does that sound like the maps are fairly drawn to you? It doesn't. It wouldn't make sense to any person, regular person that you talk to on the streets. And so Kirk was making the point that by switching control of the state Supreme Court, it allows the case to be brought up again and to be considered again. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing that says that maps have to be locked in for 10 years. It simply says at most every 10 years, maps have to be redrawn to account for population shifts. But there is ample precedent for changing maps in the middle of a decade. And that surely needs to happen now if we're to actually have fair representation in the state of Wisconsin instead of court-sanctioned cheating. So I really want to tip my cap to Kirk Bangstad for continuing to bang the drum on that. Because otherwise, what we end up getting is Republican control, minority control, and them advancing extreme viewpoints that do not have majority support. For example, you will not find a majority of Americans that want America to default on its financial and debt obligations. And yet that's exactly what Republicans in Congress are trying to force through so that they can bring about dramatic cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and a host of other federal programs. Knowing full well that by forcing this issue, it's not going to stop any new spending. The whole debt ceiling debate that's going on right now in Congress is about paying the bills for spending that's already been authorized. So, you know, you've used your credit card, you've bought things, you have committed to that spending, and yet you refuse to write the check to cover those costs. You and I both know you wouldn't do that. And by the way, it doesn't give back the old spending. That spending still happened. And that's what's happening here. Then Republicans in Congress took it a step further. One of their first acts was to, in part, defund the IRS. Because they love to beat up on the IRS and to make up stories about how tens of thousands of agents are going to be hired to go after the middle class. when, as has been explained properly and amply, the new agents would help a severely understaffed IRS go after millionaire tax cheats, which are robbing this country blind. And you and I have to make up the difference for that. But that's not what the Republican plan calls for. The Republican plan calls for instead a national sales tax of anywhere from 23 to 30%. You'd get rid of the income tax, according to this plan, which, again, to some people sounds very appealing, and make it very simple. Let's just have a national sales tax without explaining to Americans what an immense tax shift that would be. The very wealthy would pay far fewer, a far lower percentage of their ample household income on taxes, whereas middle class and lower income families would pay an extremely higher percentage of their limited wealth in taxes through sales taxes instead. And there's more. If you get rid of the income tax in the name of simplicity, and you get rid of all the deductions that go along with it, you're talking about getting rid of things like the child tax credit, which is keeping so many families out of poverty. You're talking about getting rid of tax credits that help pay for health insurance premiums because of the Affordable Care Act. You're talking about getting rid of a host of other benefits that are targeted. Yes, it makes a tax code more complex, but it's that kind of targeted tax code that actually makes it more fair than a one-size-fits-all national sales tax, which falls disproportionately on middle income and lower income folks. And then at the state level, that too is exactly the initial proposal from Republicans in the legislature. They want a flat tax. They want to take all of the many income tax brackets that we have right now and shrink them down to the lowest one. Right now, the lowest income families in Wisconsin pay a state income tax of about 3.5%. And the very wealthiest families in Wisconsin pay a state income tax of about 7%. That being said, what they, the wealthiest, pay in income tax is still not nearly the percentage of their household wealth compared to what lower income families have to pay. That's the whole reason behind having a progressive tax code. By getting rid of that and bringing it down to that 3.5% level, all you've done is given the very wealthiest a huge tax break while you've done diddly squat for lower income families and not much for middle class families either. And yet, there's somehow this feeling that by simply saying flat tax enough times and fair tax enough times and abolish the IRS enough times, that's going to generate popular support. And I don't think it will. Because again, coming back to the national level, if there is a default by the U.S. government on its financial obligations, this has been studied a lot. It certainly was a decade ago when this kind of thing happened, and the U.S. economy took a very hard hit as a result. This time around, it will probably cost the economy at least 3 million jobs if there's a government shutdown, people that won't get paid. The average 401k account is going to take about a $20,000 hit. The average cost of a 30-year mortgage is going to go up about $130,000 total. And the national debt is going to grow by $1 billion. All of this happens because interest rates are going to go up substantially for borrowing if the U.S. defaults on paying back what we have borrowed for our vital programs and services. And what's more, one of the things the government may have to do at the federal level while they fight over the debt ceiling is suspend payments to retirement funds. And we all know that the only reason that state and federal employee pension funds and retirement funds are still solvent is that they have been funded properly and on time over the years. Unlike so many private sector pension and retirement funds that were not adequately funded and went into default. So just remember this, when you're making out your next check for your mortgage or for your car payment, refuse to pay it. Tell the car company, the mortgage company, that, you know, you just can't increase your debt ceiling, even though you already agreed that you were going to make this payment. See how well that flies. It won't do well, just as it won't do well for the national economy. We've got Hometown Health with Dr. Kristen Lierley coming up next. You're up north.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I like to teach the world to sing. Sing with me.
Yes, I know we played this in the last hour as well, but that was because it was a Coca-Cola jingle and we were talking about Coke versus Pepsi at Culver's. But it seemed to be the right song to play again about teaching the world to sing and music education and the healing power of music, which takes us right into this week's Hometown Health segment with our friend, Dr. Kristen Lierley. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Great. I mean, I'm looking outside. The snow is kind of tapered off here on Lake Wissota. Got about 3 inches or snow, so it's got that special magical holiday feel, which, you know, in a day or two is going to turn into the dread of where the hell is spring. But right now it looks nice, so I'm okay.
You just got back from Costa Rica.
Oh,
enjoy
yeah.
the snow for a little while.
I am not looking for pity at all on that. You see this tan? You see this tan? This is a happy tan. Tell us about your friends and about something called Doctors in Recital and what it does for physicians and for music education in the Fox Valley.
Yeah. So this week on Hometown Health, we feature a beautiful local program that means so much to me. It highlights the intersection of music and health in a big community building way in the greater Green Bay area. It's called Doctors in Recital. This year, the show will be at the Widener Center, which is on the UWGB campus on Saturday, the 28th. So not this Saturday, but next Saturday. And it is truly an evening of musical excellence. It's put on by physicians in the Green Bay area who donate their time and their talent to raise money for local causes. Each act in the show is headlined by a physician with a passion for music and a commitment to patient care. And lots of other healthcare professionals share the stage as backup musicians and choir members. It's great for all of us. But the coolest thing is, since 2006, Doctors in Recital has raised over, catch this, $500,000 for local charities. This year, they are raising money for the Birder School of Performing Arts, the Brown County Community Gardens Program, and Green Bay East High School's Choral Department. So with all of that, I am so excited this morning to welcome my dear friends, Lucinda Roberts, who is the executive producer, and Kim Shefchik, who is the board chair for Doctors in Recital. Ladies, welcome.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So Lucinda, let's start out with just the basics. Where did Doctors in Recital come from? What's the history of this really interesting, important program?
Sure. Well, I was working on a master's in music business, and I was in New York, affiliated with Steinway. And I was in one of those like beautiful New York boardrooms. I was the only woman, and there's like 15 men, and they're all in suits. And I remember I had this really cute outfit, and the room was like 50 degrees because it was all men with their suit coats on, and I'm freezing like crazy. And they started talking about different programming and opportunities to really highlight Steinway pianos, because it was a Steinway perspective. And they talked about what they call the physician's recital. And as I sat there, you know, I'm a woman of faith, and I heard God's voice say to me, you can do this. And I thought, oh boy, I don't know. No, you can do this. You should do this. So when I came back after classes, then I met with my boss at the time from a local music store and presented it to him. And he said, nope, don't want you to do that. I just want you to do something like at somebody's home. And I'm like, oh, darn. And so I went to who he wanted me to ask. And it was a physician. And that physician said, oh, no, I can't do that. I don't want everybody in my house. And I'm like, awesome, because I don't want to do it either. I want to do the recital. So I went back to my boss and I said, the doctor said, no. I said, I'm going to do the recital. And my boss said, well, okay, then. And so that was kind of how it started. And I just started making cold calls to physicians that I knew played, you know, that I had gotten, you know, their names, and just started calling and saying, I'd like to do this. And would you be interested? And it was a little scary at first, but it was fun. And our first year was in 2007 for the performance. And we had 9 performances. And we did it at the Widener in their small venue. And we had about 145 people that attended. And now, as of last Sunday, we've sold over 600 tickets already. And there's more that have been sold since then. And so we could easily have over 1,500 at the show this year. So we've come a long way, baby.
That's how divine inspiration works, baby. Yeah, yeah. So Kim, when you are asking physicians to join in, are they reluctant or are they excited about it?
Well, if you're Kristen Lyerly, they're reluctantly excited.
That's fair. That is fair.
Actually, you know, it's amazing to me how many physicians have a background in music. I mean, I think if you look at the research on brains and how there's such a intersection of the sciences and music and the arts, and it's a beautiful thing how it comes together so often, whether it's their outlet for relieving stress or whether they actually, like some of the people in our show, have degrees in music or have done music performance. And there are a few, though, that we kind of have to drag a bit because they're just not sure of where they fit in. But it's just amazing how Lucinda gets it all put together, and everyone seems to have a great niche and star shining moment.
And it's true. There are a couple Juilliard trained physicians who are performing. You think of doctors as just doctors, but doctors tend to have a lot of breadth in their background, and music and medicine fit together so beautifully, which is why this works so well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I can testify to that, being married to a physician myself who played both piano and saxophone, was in marching band, was the church organist for a time. And that, again, it's just making different parts of the brain work at once. And Kristen, as you know full well, multitasking has to be kind of top of mind. And you have to be as creative as you are analytical in practicing medicine. But, you know, again, the point of it being that, yes, these physicians, these healthcare workers who appreciate music are getting together, but you're doing it to benefit music education, because a music education benefits more than physicians. It can benefit anybody in their later life, not just for entertainment's sake, but just, again, getting your mind thinking in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And think about, you know, all of the things we've all been through in the last 3 years and how music has really created a safe space, especially for young people to stay connected. And I can see that in my own children who, you know, the pandemic was hard on a lot of other activities, but somehow they were still able to keep doing music because it's a solo act and it's a group act, and it allows them to stay creative and have some joy and feel like they're contributing. So
mm-hmm. It's really true. I know in my life, music has been that place where I can always go to, where I'm at my wit's end, or I need a little peace, or maybe I have too much energy and I need to burn some of that off. Music fulfills all of those different places. And, you know, Doctors in Recital has a tagline where you make a difference by making music. So we are using music to make a difference in other avenues. Lucinda, tell us more about how Doctors in Recital does that.
Sure. Well, we've always had a focus on supporting a local, what we lovingly call a mom and pop type charity, an organization that perhaps wouldn't qualify for the big foundation, you know, grants out there, but where a smaller grant can still make a significant difference. You know, I know of one year, that was probably third year out, that we were able to raise close to $50,000 that year. And they put that into an account and set it up like an endowment, and that they're still using those monies today, you know, and, you know, 10 years later easily to support women and children. So we have actually created a whole grant process. It wasn't always that way when it first started. Today we have a grant process. So we have a community grant recipient, which is a larger grant amount. And this year it's the community gardens. And then we have two music ed focused grant recipients. And the music ed piece was the brainstorm of a physician years back who said, none of us would be doing any of this if we hadn't had music when we were in school. What a difference music makes for students. And, you know, I work at East High School with the Fine Arts Institute, and we have a lot of students that are coming, you know, from less capable settings, that they don't always have the same opportunities. And so providing opportunities like this in a school setting, sometimes it gets them to school. So then we can help support their continued education and encourage them. And so, you know, we do make a difference by making music. You know, I can put a plug in too that we've had physicians play in a jazz band with our students from East. And there's a mentoring that goes on that way too, which is just really cool. And the physicians have said how much they enjoy interacting with the students and encouraging them. So it makes a big difference.
So many different ways it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. How do you get in on this grant process? If you are part of a local organization and you want to be a benefactor of this beautiful program, how do you apply?
Sure. Well Kim, would you like to talk to that?
Yeah, we are. We finalize our grant application and we go live with our next year's grant the night of the show. So you can go to our website, doctorsinrecital.org, and you will see, if you are interested, live on January 28th at the end of the show, that you can apply. It's not a complicated application, but really just showing how you can make a difference in our community. And then we have a process where our board reviews the applications, and then we have interviews to our top few candidates and make our selection. Hopefully we'll have a selection by the end of March, early April, because then we jump right back to getting to work for 2024, getting sponsors. We look to area businesses to help us, you know, subsidize the cost of being in the Widener. It's a beautiful facility, and we're so grateful that we have that in our community as well. So that's a huge part of our show also.
And I, as always, you know, everything has, I have to make everything political at some point or another. We wouldn't be doing this if we valued music education and the arts as much as we should. And yet all we hear from certain political circles is that schools have to be cut way back to just reading, writing, arithmetic, you know, and virtually nothing else. And that is to say that that's not necessarily the genesis of this, but that is a mindset that is prevalent and needs, I would say confronted is the right word, about the benefits of all of the arts in education for everybody.
I can just throw a quick point in that our one, we have a fine arts pathway, and Webster Elementary is is the elementary school. And we have violin and piano lessons that students choose which instrument they want to pursue at the end of first grade. And they have lessons from second through fifth grade. And we started having students do their math pieces when they came back from their music lessons. And we actually saw an increase in math scores after that. So we actually have tangible proof that the music stimulates the brain and gets them thinking in ways that they haven't before. And the proof is in the pudding. Their math scores increased. And that was something that we like to crow about, because it is proof that the arts and music make a difference in education.
They sure do. And you see that proof right here on the ground. But I mean, there's tons of data that supports it as well. Yeah. So can you give us a quick sneak peek in the 1 minute we have left of some of the great acts that we're going to see on the 28th?
Well, we're going to see an Elton John number. We're seeing a choir. We've got a ladies' vocal group doing Dancing Queen, complete with cool costumes and choreography. We've got someone doing a bare naked ladies number about what she might do if she had $1 million. Kristen Lyerly folks. That's awesome.
That's all I was waiting for. I was just waiting to see what she would do and what she would wear. And this, just please be sure to get it on video for us. Lucinda Roberts, Kim Shafchik, again, Doctors in Recital. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. It was
fun. Thank you, ladies.
All right. Thanks so much. And we'll have Hometown Health again next Thursday at 7:30. Thanks, Kristen.
You bet.
Luke Mathers coming up right after this. You're up north. There we go. If you're hearing Luke Bryan, you know we're going to hear about Dueling Tangents with Luke and Bryan with our weekly visit with Luke Mathers, who's shown up for about 20% of these weekly visits that we do. And I don't see him on my screen right now. I see some. Where the hell is Mathers? Apparently, we didn't make the cut again. But Todd Alba was the unsuspecting person sitting in that same chair who's getting set for his own show on these fine Civic Media radio stations. So, hi, Todd.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Well, not as surprised as you are. But,
you know. This is a great transition. This is really smooth.
Well, I'm always happy to talk to Pat, but, you know, I rarely get to talk to a doctor. And believe me, I need lots of help. So, you know,
she can't really help you here on this. I got news for you,
Todd.
All right, thank you.
She can maybe write you a prescription, but then you go to that pharmacy and say, my gynecologist wrote me this subscription. They're going to look at you kind of funny. Trust me.
You know, but you know,
that happens a lot though in this state.
I listened to you guys on the last segment of my drive in this morning, and very good. I like this. This is fantastic.
Thanks. This is
what she does, and she does so well. Do you know yet, Kristen? I'm putting you on the spot, but do you know what we're up to next week for Hometown Health, or is that a work in progress?
I do. I'm so glad you asked. So next week is CRNA week. These are the nurse anesthetists who take care of many of us, especially in rural hospitals, because there just aren't enough anesthesiologists to go around. So we are going to have a certified nurse anesthetist to come and talk to us about what is that job like? Where do you bump into them? How are they different than anesthesiologists? I think there's a lot of confusion, but we're just going to have a nice little chat.
I don't doubt that for 1 minute. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom national correspondent. And as we talk about the debt ceiling fight and things that are going to be affected, one of those areas is rural healthcare and rural hospitals and the impact. I mean, Kristen, you and I have talked about how tough it's going to be to recruit and retain doctors just based on the abortion ban. But even taking that out of the mix, I'm sure, Todd, you can say from a Southwest Wisconsin standpoint, rural hospitals, I'm not going to say they're having a tough time, because I know up here in this part of the state, they're closing or they're cutting back services terribly.
No, they're definitely having a tough time. I grew up in Richland Center, and we're fortunate to have a good hospital there and a good clinic situation. But when I worked for former State Senator Dale Schultz, his district included, you know, up into Juneau County, all the way down to the Illinois border in Southwest Wisconsin and over. And yeah, it's really, really tough. One of the bright spots, and I'm interested to know, Doctor, what your experience has been, and also my dad and stepmom are from Shawano, and it's great to be on Green Bay now. So we can almost get to Shawano via Green Bay. But I know up in the Shawano area, it's similar. But one of the cool projects, I think, that's a bright spot is the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where they have this rural medicine program where they're going out and recruiting folks. One of my really good friends was an integral part of that program, and I think that's exciting. And for those of you people who might not know, maybe talk a little bit about that, because that is something here in Richland Center, in Boscobel, in other places in Southwest Wisconsin, where people are coming and it's having a true effect.
Yeah, the University of Wisconsin and the Medical College of Wisconsin, which are the two big medical schools in the state, recognize that there is a need to recruit and disperse people to these rural areas. So not only has the University of Wisconsin created the WARM program, which puts medical students in places like La Crosse and Green Bay, the Medical College of Wisconsin has actually created two medical schools in Green Bay and Wausau, where people train in environments that aren't heavy duty, very academic environments. They're still academic, but the setting is so different. And many residency programs in the state are also starting to develop rural residency tracks, where residency trainees go out to these rural sites and they learn what it's like to practice medicine in these less fewer resourced areas where you really do practice very differently, but there's such charm and appeal. So there are great efforts out there that the university system and the medical college are really pushing for, and they are making a difference.
And these are, it is such a refreshing change, because when my wife attended the Medical College of Wisconsin, everything was done at what was then Milwaukee County General and Frederick, and you saw nothing but, you know, gunshot wounds and you know, babies on crack and everything. And then her residency was through the University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinic. And again, she actually really enjoyed working at Hedeman County Medical Center. But again, it was your typical big city hospital. And if she hadn't been raised on a farm, she wouldn't have had any exposure to rural medicine during her medical training. So it's really a net positive all in all that medical schools are recognizing all of this. Now, while I have you here in the couple of minutes left, we had three different fights this morning. Well, I tried to instigate three different fights this morning, and now I finally
that's a little crabby. He didn't get a lot of sleep last night.
You know, Luke would have really enjoyed this had he thought to attend today. But let's get to these now. First off, Culver's announcing that they're dropping Pepsi products and adding Coke products. Coke or Pepsi? Todd, you both look happy about
Coke.
This.
I am Coke, absolutely. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Okay, well, no controversy there.
So I'm also a Mountain Dew fan, so I know I'm going to miss the Mountain Dew at Culver's, but happy that, because I get Coke and Cherry Coke. I'm a big Cherry Coke fan.
Cherry Coke is definitely good. Yeah,
so I'm happy.
Yeah, but Aaron, you said you're just going to get the iced tea, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm still just going to get unsweetened iced tea or root beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And we know Dr. Lyerly is not regularly going to go to the soda fountain until they actually have a vodka dispenser on there as well.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Well, it's uniquely Wisconsin. Why isn't there a Bloody Mary dispenser? I mean, seriously, then you just.
Stevens Point Brewery makes a kitty cocktail.
Ooh. Okay. That would. Because you can't start them young enough. All right, next. This one, again, businesses. Farm and Fleet versus Fleet Farm. Is there a favorite or one that you frequent most often?
Fleet Farm.
Fleet Farm.
Fleet Farm usually, but, you know, Blaine's Farm and Fleet down in Boscobel. Well, I've been down there. It's a nice store, but more Fleet Farm.
I have never seen a Farm and Fleet.
Yeah.
Yeah, where Aaron and I are from, we don't even have Farm and Fleet. It's the only Fleet Farm.
And again, that Milwaukee Magazine article from last July, I think it was, does such a great job of explaining how the two had territories that never even overlapped until not that many years ago. Basically, you know, Marshfield was kind of the cutoff. If you were, you know, north and west of that, it was all Farm and Fleet, and south and east of that was Fleet Farm. But people are still thinking that it was the result of two brothers fighting, when that's not the case. I want to call it an urban myth, but I guess we'd call it a rural myth, right? Based on the kind of stores that we're talking about. All right, last thing. Chili. Bowl of chili. Big pot of chili. You've added noodles to it. Is it still chili?
Yes.
Well, absolutely. Macaroni. You can't have chili without elbow macaroni.
There it is. Alex Worley, whose video set off a firestorm in the Up North News comment section. Good for you for saying that, doing a video that says it can't be Wisconsin chili unless it's got noodles in it. You guys are all over it. Mm-hmm. There's no fight.
Here's a little secret, a little bit of Hershey's chocolate. Melt that in your chili. Gives it just a little bit of tang.
Whoa.
There's your tip for the day.
Oh, you just got Kristen's attention.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, you guys. I appreciate it. Luke, I don't want to fire you on air, but we just might continue this thing if it goes on. Thanks, you guys. Have a great day. Tomorrow, State Assembly Rep Lisa Subek, also Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Bakiel. Todd Albo is next on many of these Civic Media radio stations. Have a great day. We'll see you Friday.